Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today speaking with Dr. Tricia Pine. She's director of the Associated Archives at St. Mary's Seminary and University in Roland Park. Dr. Pine, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
The Archdiocese of Baltimore is the oldest diocese. St. Mary's Seminary is the oldest American seminary. And the Sulpicians, who operate St. Mary's, were the first order that Bishop John Carroll sought for assistance in here in the new Diocese of Baltimore. You oversee the collection of all three of these entities, making it one of the most important jobs in preserving the history of the American Church. How does that make you feel when you walk in every morning knowing that you have such an important job?
Well, it really is a privilege to be steward of the collections that are so significant to understanding the founding and development of the Catholic Church in this country. And the program they've created here in Baltimore is pretty unique. It came about through the collaborative effort of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, St. Mary's Seminary, and the U.S. province of the Sulpicians, and serves as the repository of these three organizations' archives. And the idea for bringing these archives together is credited to Cardinal William Keeler. And he's the one that suggested that they jointly fund the building of this new facility at St. Mary's, which opened in the spring of 2002. So we're just marking our, 13th anniversary very shortly. And they continue to share the cost of operating the program. And in bringing these collections together, it really highlights the long and shared history of these three institutions that, as you said, dates back to the founding period of the U.S. Catholic Church. And as you point out, it also includes two archbishops who were also Sulpicians. So there really is a very close history between the Sulpicians, St. Mary's, and the Archdiocese.
That's great. So the collections, while they're all housed together, they're separate. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Each institution continues to own their archives, and they have specific policies for caring for their records and for access and how they're managed. So they're all in one facility, but there's three different areas that have been allocated in the building for where the collections are housed, and the division between them is very clear.
That must make for a very expansive collection, and I'm wondering how they're organized.
Sure. Well, for the most part, we have a paper. It's largely a paper archives in our holdings. We have letters of the archbishops, administrative papers for the provincials of the Sulpicians and for the operation of the seminary. We also have things like photos, and we have a small library, very few artifacts. We also have a collection of sacramental registers from the archdiocese parishes on microfilm, which is probably one of our most heavily used collections in the holdings, and we also have the archdiocesan newspapers and microfilm as well. So it's a good mix, but it's mainly paper beeps. So you have to be prepared to read when you
come be able to get
to
a lot of paper. So can you give us a little bit of a feel for some of the more notable pieces that are in the collection that might be of interest to some folks?
Well, sure. Probably the most important document that we have in our holdings is the papal document that established Baltimore as the first diocese in this country and appointed John Carroll bishop. We also have letters from U.S. presidents, including Jefferson, Madison, Teddy Roosevelt. We have letters and drawings of Henry Benjamin Latrobe, the father of American architecture, who designed Baltimore's first cathedral. We have letters from bishops around the country and around the world, letters from the Holy See on a whole range of matters. We also have things like letters from the holy men and women from the archdiocese who responded to the cause of the local church and went on to found religious communities, hospitals, schools, and churches here. And we also have letters from the laity that talk about their experience of what it was like to settle in Baltimore, Baltimore, frequently from a foreign land, the struggles they went through to find jobs, support their families, build churches and schools for their communities, and just to share what it meant to be a Catholic in Baltimore. So it's a wide range of matters. I always say it's not just a collection of documents that we have in our buildings. These are the documents that give witness to the history of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and they really are a legacy, and why it's so important that we preserve them and take such good care of them.
You mentioned President Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt. He was particularly close to Cardinal Gibbons, who was the longest-serving Archbishop of Baltimore, wasn't he?
That's correct. He was our ninth Archbishop, and he came into office in 1877 and died in 1921, so that was quite a long period of time to be in office. He was recognized to be leader of the U.S. Catholic Church during that time period, and so this is why we see U.S. presidents turning to him for advice on different matters, particularly on Catholic issues or matters that affected the Catholic community, and one of those presidents that he became quite close to was Teddy Roosevelt. So we do have a number of letters and photographs of the two of them together.
That must be pretty interesting, though, when you're able to go through the archives and see letters that, you know, you're holding letters that were written by U.S. presidents.
Oh, absolutely. Pretty special, along with letters from those who went on to be declared saints, such as Elizabeth Ann Seton or St. John Neumann. So it's always just a thrill to open up a box, and sometimes you're never quite sure what you're going to find, but then
right.
You usually will find a treasure.
I would imagine there'll be people who hear this program who may have some interest in seeing those documents that are publicly available for view. Is the archives available to the public, and if so, how do they make that happen?
Sure, we are. We do have a web page that has a good description of the holdings that we have in our archives and what's open for people to consult. We do require that people make appointments to come in and work with the material. I said some of our most heavily used collections are the sacramental records, which is why we do require appointments, because we do have so many people coming in to take a look at them, and also those who want to look at the archdiocesan newspapers, our collection of directories for people who want to go back and reconstruct what their parish looked like over time. They want to see who the pastors were, how many people were attending their parish, who was operating the school, how many students are enrolled, so things like that. So we have a number of resources that are of great interest both to the family historian and the parish historian. We also have a number of scholars and graduate students who come in, who are working on various projects, books, articles, dissertations, who do need to have access to the papers of the archbishops and the provincials of the Sulpicians to build a better understanding of the project that they're researching.
Why is it important to preserve history by holding on to such things as letters and photographs?
Well, I think as I mentioned a minute ago, we really have to see these as our legacy. They give voice to those who went before us and relate to them, their experiences, their struggles, their triumphs, their witness to what it was to be a Catholic at a certain point in time. And these documents allow us to do that. They allow us to go back and reconstruct what was happening at a particular point in time and understand what the Church was going through in different points in history.
And how is technology evolved and changed the way people who do what you do?
Well, it's had a tremendous impact on our research. It's allowed us to do many things that we weren't able to do in the past, particularly in how we organize our material. Where it's really had the greatest impact probably is in our ability to digitize a number of our holdings, specifically photographs. In the past, when someone wanted a copy of a photograph, we would have to take it out to a photo lab and then go back and pick it up, and it was a very time-consuming process. But now we can just scan it in to the dimensions and specifications of the people who made the request, send it to them, and then once it's scanned in, we can continue to use it in whatever format, either for other requests or in publications or on the website. So it really just enables us to do so much more with our photo holdings, and so much quicker and more efficiently for the staff.
You mentioned the sacramental records are popular, and I assume that's because you have people doing genealogy, family history research.
Right.
So what advice do you have for the amateur, if not the expert, genealogist?
Well, again, we have a page on our website that is dedicated just for those who are interested in working on their family history. It reviews what we have in our holdings, but also we have a number of resources and suggestions for those who are just getting started, the information that they'll need to know to get started to identify where their family lived, what parish they might have attended. We have links to a number of other resources, just as census records, online directories, different repositories that have records that would be of interest to those working on their family history. So would recommend anyone who does have some questions as to how they get started or perhaps maybe how they continue their research if they've run into a dead end to take a look at our website for some suggestions.
Well, I'm sure the information that you are making available on your website, as well as the wonderful organization of the archives, will make it as easy as possible and the people who come there. And again, for information, visit the archives webpage, which is part of the St. Mary's website.
That's correct. stmarys.edu.
Perfect. And for more information, please visit that website. Dr. Tricia Pine from St. Mary's Seminary, thanks for being with us.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is establishing a working group charged with developing spiritual, pastoral, and policy advocacy support for immigrants and refugees, according to a report from Catholic News Service. Cardinal Daniel N. DiNardo of Galveston, Houston, USCCB president, has named members of the working group with the mandate of closely following developments related to immigrants and refugees in the United States. Archbishop Jose H. Gomez of Los Angeles, USCCB Vice President, will chair the group. The groundwork for the working group was set during the bishop's annual Fall General Assembly in Baltimore, when several bishops suggested the conference closely monitor actions by the federal government that affect immigrants and refugees. In announcing the working group, the Public Affairs Office said the bishops and USCCB staff will be ready to respond to any executive orders and legislation that the new Congress and President-elect Donald J. Trump may introduce. National Migration Week was observed last week, January 8th through the 14th. Visit CatholicReview.org for more information. It's award season in Hollywood. Golden Globes have already been presented, and Oscar nominations are expected to be announced January 24th. Before you head out to the theater, be sure to check out our movie reviews at CatholicReview.org. Reviewers from Catholic News Service and the Catholic Review provide classifications that let you know for which audience a film is best suited. They also provide information about any moral objections that may be raised in a film. Some recently reviewed movies include La La Land and Manchester by the Sea, along with Silence, a critically acclaimed film about Catholic missionaries to Japan. For more information, visit CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matisek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have the Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Hi, welcome back to Catholic Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and we're here today with Father Gil Seitz, who works in the Tribunal for the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Father Seitz, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, Sean. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You work in the Marriage Tribunal for the Archdiocese. Can you explain to our listeners what the tribunal does and why it exists and what its primary role is?
Yeah. The tribunal exists primarily to give people a forum in which they can vindicate their rights. Just like in any kind of group or organization, the law of the church has laws, and there are opportunities for folks to come and, in this particular forum, vindicate their rights. The tribunal is basically, Sean, the church court system. Just like any civil jurisdiction has a court system, so the church does. And our purpose is to ensure that folks experience justice. But what's unique about our system is that you not only in our system experience justice as you would in the civil system, but hopefully we do that in a way that allows you to encounter Jesus. And that's what's absolutely critical and essential about our system. It must be not only about justice, but also encountering Jesus. If we don't allow people to encounter Jesus when they come to us, as I tell the officers of the court, we failed them.
So how is the tribunal set up, just briefly, in terms of helping people understand? You mentioned the court. You know, explain that for people.
Like any court, we have judges who make decisions, the decision makers. We have notaries, people who make a record of what transpires in the course of our work. We have lawyers, advocates that represent people, help them to plead their cases. So essentially, the officers of our court are similar to the officers that folks would see in a civil court system. And again, their task is to help folks experience justice and to meet Jesus.
So what are some of the kinds of issues people bring to the tribunal?
Primarily, what we see are cases involving marriage. Unfortunately, in the past 10 years, we've had other kinds of unfortunate and very painful cases in which we've had to deal with people who are accused of misconduct. But primarily, we deal with cases involving marriage. That's why, quite frankly, we're usually called the marriage tribunal. We're equipped to deal with more than those kinds of cases. But ordinarily, it's cases related to marriage. And the reason for that is the church maintains that all marriages have a uniqueness to them. All marriages change people's status in the church. All marriages are considered, as we say, valid. But some folks will come to us and say, no, wait, I was part of that. I was in that marriage. And believe me, this was not what the church says marriage should be. Well, now we have a controversy. The church says one thing, the folks are saying something else. Someone has to decide. Mm-hmm. And that's where the tribunal comes in. The tribunal makes the decision, as would happen in any kind of situation in which people are claiming guilt, innocence, right, wrong. The independent third party intervenes to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. And so someone is coming to you seeking an annulment of the marriage. So can you explain what that term means? I'm sure it gets bandied about, you know, probably inaccurately at times. So what does it mean in the eyes of the church, and how does your office deal with annulments?
Yeah, it sure does get confused. To understand what the tribunal does, it's probably good to understand what the church says marriage is. The church says, first and foremost, marriage is a covenant. It's something that's instituted by God. It's something that's brought about by God. It's something that comes about because of the action of God. And that relationship that God brings about is always between a man and a woman. That relationship is unique, not only because it's brought about by God, but because it's a partnership of the whole of life, a partnership of every aspect of life. That's the uniqueness of marriage. Now, the church presumes that all marriages are precisely that, brought about by God between a man and a woman, in which a partnership of every aspect of life has been established. Well, what if that's not the case? What if folks haven't been listening to God's whispering to their heart, and instead of calling them to this relationship, they choose that relationship? Or what about the situation where folks just marry because they think they must, or marry because the family says they have to? Hardly a covenant, hardly instituted by God, hardly a partnership. How do we prove that? How do we establish that fact? So the tribunal exists so that folks can come and essentially prove the fact that it was not what the church says marriage should be. If they can prove that, then they're free to marry again. So an annulment is a declaration by the church that says, for one reason or another, this marriage was not what the church says marriage is to be.
And your office has taken some efforts in recent years to try and educate Catholics about what an annulment is and maybe dispel some of the myths surrounding annulments. Can you talk a little bit about what your office has done in that regard?
Yeah, Sean. We're trying to do a couple of things. First of all, what we're trying to do is get out to parishes and let folks see who we are. Let folks see the face of the tribunal, if you will. Let folks see what we're about. And we do presentations in parishes, usually about 6 or 8 a year in various parts of the Archdiocese, from Western Maryland to Southern Anne Arundel County, from up in Hickory down to Clarksville. We try and blanket the Archdiocese every year and explain our service to folks, explain our ministry to folks, explain what the church does in this regard and why the tribunal exists. So that's one aspect of what we do. Another aspect is to try and make use of our website to provide information for folks so that if they want to learn something about the tribunal, they can find some good information there. But mostly what we try and do is do one-to-one contact with folks and listen to their story and explain how the tribunal can be of service to them and how we might be able to help them in the situation in which they find themselves. So often folks who have experienced broken or failed marriages find themselves in just really, really difficult, painful, hurtful situations. And sometimes just by listening to those folks and letting them know that the church is there and the church cares for them, they can meet the healing presence of Jesus. And that's just so important, mm-hmm. and that's so essential to what we do and who we are as a tribunal.
What are some of the myths that you encounter, some of the misinformation? People come with preconceived notions, cost, time, those kinds of things. Can you touch briefly on those?
Yeah, someone just tried to convince me recently that bringing a case before the tribunal costs $5,000, and that was pretty amusing. That's hardly the case. Money is probably the biggest myth, that it costs an exorbitant amount of money to bring a case to the tribunal. I suspect folks have that perception because of what they experienced in their civil divorce proceedings, mm-hmm. which can be rather costly. That's not the case. That's simply not the case when it comes to the service, the ministry that tribunals throughout the United States, in fact, offer. In the Archdiocese of Baltimore, it will be no more than $550 for you to bring your case to the tribunal. That's all there is. There will be no other costs involved. So that's the first myth.
Mm-hmm.
The second myth is that it takes an extraordinarily long period of time. Someone was telling me about a case that took 7 or 8 years. That's just not true. Today, it might take 7 or 8 months, but certainly not 7 or 8 years. They're primarily the two mm-hmm. biggest myths that unfortunately folks labor under, and we've been doing our best to try and dispel
sure.
those.
I think education campaigns are helping a great deal. We've got about 30 seconds left. How can people learn more about what the tribunal does, how they can contact the tribunal, and maybe learn more about when your next education event is?
Please call us. Call us at our main office number, 410-547-5533, or visit our website at archbalt.org.
Father Gil Seitz from the Tribunal of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be here.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.